At this point, I get to introduce the speaker, and I'll be brief, but this is a big hospital, and sometimes in this hospital, we forget that there's two sides of this hospital, that there's a huge addiction component, but there's also a psych component. And this is one of the ladies that I got to know when I first came in, and she has embraced her recovery. She is a model for how it works, and she works with other people that have emotional problems or issues that they come in with. And it's really a pleasure. She's a classy lady. She's got a classy husband. They got a classy dog. And so I want to introduce you, and I look forward to hearing Cam. You can tell us her story now.
I need room to work. So, a bunch of people were asking me, are you nervous? This is my safe place, man. My friends are here. Are you kidding me? So I'm Cam, and I'm a psycho. I have major depressive disorder and anxiety. And I smile saying that, not as the mask that I used to use, but did a lot of crying, a lot of tears, a lot of misery, holding up in my bed under the covers, and I don't need to do that anymore. And I'll tell you a little bit about what led me here, but the bulk of what I want to say is what excites me every day, which is my recovery program. My recovery program keeps me alive. Just like addiction, psych issues will kill you. Tried to kill me 2 times. And, you know, I tell people, I'm an overachiever. Went to a good school, got good grades, had a good job. I could not figure that suicide thing out. I failed twice. The only other thing I almost failed twice was organic chemistry. So, my background is, I'm originally from Virginia, transplanted to Atlanta for college. From a Jewish family, very traditional, 2 older brothers, we were all adopted. I'm sure some of y'all can relate. You're living in that bubble of your home and being raised, and that's normal. That's your normal. Everybody's mom really doesn't pay much attention to them, and you know, you hurt and skin your knee, nobody's there for you. That's normal. And then I was in this bubble for 18 years and come down to college and meet all these people, and I'm going to people's houses like, wait a minute, this is really different. They're not arguing, their brothers aren't going nuts. My oldest brother is a paranoid schizophrenic. I'm 4 years younger than he is. So when I was a teenager, he was turning 20, and that's when his disease started manifest. And it was very volatile, scary, violent. My other brother, who's 9 months older than me, and don't forget adoption, 9 months older than me, is, I don't even really like saying functional alcoholic, but he seems to maintain a job, and his wife seems to be still married to him, and they have a child who seems normal. So with all that going on, I went to Emory, I went to nursing school, my background is in nursing. I remember having to do my psych rotation. Holy mackerel, I was terrified because of what I had grown up in. My home was not a place where I can trust people. I have issues with women because I didn't have women there to comfort me or nurture me. I was an island, right, Meredith? I'm an island. I thought that's how everybody had to do it. This whole concept of I don't have to do it alone, holy mackerel, thank you. That's huge for me. But it took me years to embrace that and believe that there are people out there that love me for the weird person that I am, for what I am, and it's okay when things aren't good. So, you know, scooting out of that history with my family, I had the molestation check. I had boys do inappropriate things check. When I was 20, I was raped check. So, you know, I don't know if some of y'all can relate to that, but I did it. And I did it with no help, no counseling, until I went to school and I had my very first panic attack. And they sent me to the psych unit at Emory. And I remember, and I always had this fear, they sent me to a therapist for the first time I'd ever seen a therapist, and I'm kind of telling them all this kind of stuff about my home and kind of in the same kind of jovial attitude that I'm telling you, and they're just like, I mean, their jaws dropping. And I'm thinking, God, he probably doesn't believe me. But because it's just one thing after another, but it's true. And anyway, I saw him twice and we were done. Moving on, I barely got through nursing school because my depression had just real, I'd gotten on the depression chain, train. I had, could barely go to classes. I had a couple of girlfriends that I trusted that would help me get going. I didn't understand why I couldn't get out of bed. My clinical for my senior year, you know, second semester senior year, if you don't show up on time one more time, you're not going to graduate. Oh, I mean, I'm like in a cold sweat trying to get dressed in that ridiculous white uniform. No hats then, thank God. Ridiculous white uniform with the white tights and everything. And oh, just a nightmare. And the lady that I was working in was just mean. She, you know, they'd say nurses eat, they're young. I mean, this woman was an eater. And I got through that, and I really wanted to go home to Virginia, which was my safe place, right? No. And my mother really didn't think that that was a good place for me to meet a nice Jewish boy. Because that's why I went from this little town in Virginia to Atlanta for the Jewish population. Nobody had ever heard, I'd never heard of Emory. Emory, early Methodist, only recently Yiddish. So my mom, you know, I graduated with this nursing degree, that's supposed to be a great thing. I didn't find my husband. Can you believe it? All that money spent and I did not score. So I don't know why I listened, but you know, my mother said I couldn't come back home, so I finally settled myself in Atlanta, and I met Mr. Wonderful, the Messiah, in case you didn't know, the Jewish Jesus. Nice doctor, good looking, he was actually taller than me, score. And he was probably the most unhealthy person that I had ever been out with. And you know what? Mom loved him. He was, so you know how you go to, you migrate toward your normal, even if it's not good, because that's our normal. So I stayed with this guy, and he was really a lot like my mother. He's very self-centered, emotionally unconnected, communication, what's that? My family was so desperate for this guy to be my husband, that when he met my grandparents and had Quaaludes and scotch and passed out in his salad plate at the country club meeting my grandparents, the wedding was still on. I mean, seriously? So, I looked like Cinderella at my wedding. I really didn't give a shit. And it was all good. And from then on, I just tried to do what I normally did, which was keep my shit together. I'm a rock. Didn't get help for myself. I'm doing everything everybody told me to do. Supposedly, you know, it should be all unicorns and daffodils. And next thing you know, I'm in Talbot Recovery Center with the Jewish Messiah because he's an addict and an alcoholic. And I'm in family workshop. That was my first family workshop in 97. And I'm sitting there, you know, little Pollyanna, oh, I did the right thing, what am I doing here? And I started to have a panic attack. I was completely overwhelmed. I have four children. At the time, I had two. I had one that was 6 months old, and I had one that was almost two. And we were finishing out the basement with a new bar, because now we were going to become a wine connoisseur. So, you know, my whole life was blowing up in my face. I didn't know what had panic attacks. And fortunately, I was 30. Fortunately, the staff there clearly knew there was something wrong, sent me to the emergency room, and I got diagnosed with depression for the first time at 30. I'm 50 now. So it's been 20 years of bliss. So got diagnosed with the depression. Saw a counselor. Counselor said, you know, let's have your husband come in. Had a little counseling session. Well, the Messiah decided that this was not a good counselor and you're not going to see him anymore. Okay. So hooked me up with a friend of his who was an internist who's giving me my antidepressants. And boom, 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 everything's marching along. Had another kid, because that's what you do. And next thing you know, my father passes away. That was very, you know, you would think being molested and raped would be these really, you know, pivotal points, you know. But it was my father's death that just rocked my world. Because my father was my home. He was a comforting man. He was a kind man. If I had a problem, I could talk to him. But it was on kind of a undercurrent because if my mother knew I was giving my father all that attention, she would lash out at him because he's the good guy and I'm the bad guy. And you're giving him more. You know, it's like, really? I need to worry about this? But that's kind of the normal. So my father died in 02. And just kind of was trying. By this point, I'd had all my kids. My son, who was my youngest, was one. And, I was just kind of taking my medicine. No recovery program. I didn't have a concept that there was a recovery program. And I the doctor started taking me off my antidepressants because he figured it would have been 2 years since my father had died and I should be fine now. And that led to my first suicide attempt in 05. You know, I'm a nurse, high achiever, had the pills, crushed them up. I'm a good person. I did the laundry and the dishes and the house was clean and I sent my kids all off to school and I wrote a list what my husband was going to need to do to sign the kids up for what they needed to do that semester. It was January and took the powder pills and just lied down. I was like, oh, thank you. I can't do this anymore. I was really happy about this. And somehow, I have relationships with my biological parents, and I called my biological father to tell him he needed to take my cat, and he thought something sounded weird, and he called my husband saying something was wrong, and sent a neighbor to the house, and next thing I know, the ambulance was there. Next thing you know, I'm in North Fulton Hospital where he worked. I'm being completely inappropriate. And they sent me here for the first time in 05. And I was terrified because of my experiences with my brother, with both of my brothers. And I was in Kadesi for a few days. I mean, I was this big. I was taking away somebody else's oxygen by being here. It wasn't that, I didn't surrender so much, because you kind of want to get here and want to do it different. I was just trying to keep breathing. And they put me in the residence, and at the time, back in 05, they kept you here for about 8 weeks. And at about 7 weeks, I received my, the deputy brought my divorce papers. So, and I joke about this with some of my friends, at the time, oh, son of a bitch, he's real classy and everything like that. But you know what? And this is how I manage my depression with really difficult situations. There's some, it's that faith that I'm not in charge. It was the best thing that could have happened to me. I probably would have gone home and tried to make it work and probably not gotten any kind of recovery program and just live in the cesspool. But fortunately, he was classy enough to give me divorce papers. I had to find a place to live. I had to get an attorney and do all this. And marching on along, lost custody of all four of my children. I was a stay-at-home mom. That was not good. I would probably say my identity was very much so wrapped up in being a mother. But I got out of Ridgeview, but I really didn't do a recovery program. Because my ex, or at the time my husband, was an addict, I was, that was a dirty word to me. I was not an addict. I wasn't one of them in the auditorium. Why are they making me go to the AA meetings? I'm not an alcoholic, and they make me shove it, and I don't pay attention. I sit in the back of the room. Y'all don't know magazines back there. I was in the back with the crossword puzzle, because that wasn't for me. So skipped on along and just kind of made it by the skin of my teeth. God works in really mysterious ways. And God to me is like an energy. It's not a he or a she, because the he's and the she's, that's too powerful for people. So to me, it's kind of an energy. And somehow, it all works out the way it's supposed to. I met somebody who compliments me, who doesn't take over me, who's not threatened by me, and really cares about me. White-haired guy in the front. Not him, that one. I wasn't doing a really good recovery program. And they said, if you don't do a really good recovery program, you're going to end up with a blonde or brunette version of what you left, because that's your normal. You migrate back to the sickness, because that's what, it's wrong, but it feels good. Now I can say I deserve him because of the shit that I went through. And when we first got, it wasn't a recovery program yet, but when we first got married, oh my God, thank goodness he wants to be with me. And I told him, honey, you need to either shit or get off the pot, because I'm not doing this anymore. I wanted to get married and all. And I was probably about this big then. I was going from here to about here. It was a great relationship. Russ and I know how to communicate. We're happy with, if there's a problem, we see therapists. We had a huge knockdown drag out this past Tuesday, and I still love him. But what ended up happening, I wasn't doing anything. Periodically saw a therapist, but mostly just saw somebody for medicines. And the medicine that I had been on for almost 9 years, had my body had adjusted to it. And I didn't recognize I was going back into a state of depression, and I tried to kill myself again. I got a nice house. Granted, my relationship with my kids is for shit because my ex-husband says terrible things about me. But, you know, I have a nice husband, but I'm convinced he's such a great guy, he'll be fine. You know, he's good. And I figured, you know, okay, second time around, I got this now, I know what to do, and it's so obnoxious. I thought it'd be really cool to go down by the river and kill myself. And I woke up, this time I woke up in Northside Hospital, and I could not believe I was here. I was furious. What I found out later was there were pills on the car seat. And I had passed out before I finished taking all my pills. And my biological mother came down from Virginia, and she said, "Cam, there's a reason you're still here." You know, what reason for this piece of shit still be here? I don't understand that. But for some reason, that stuck to me. And, you know, Russ kind of came to visit me at visitations. And he participated in family workshop while I was here. What a concept. That didn't happen the first time around. There's a couples meeting on Tuesday nights for people who are in residence. Really? I come out here for a meeting. Russ, what the hell are you doing here, couple? Really? I mean, damn. You know, he's willing to do something not for himself, but for me? God, that's a new concept for me. So, got on new medicine, started doing things. Well, I was definitely more involved. I didn't have the AA, you know, I'm not that. I just kind of embraced the whole Ridgeview thing. Did a couple meetings in the addiction side. I thought they would be helpful for me. I sat in the front row. I didn't doodle in the back anymore. I kept all my paperwork, and I was telling a friend of mine, I was honest to the point where it was uncomfortable, because I knew if I didn't tell people what was going on, you can't see depression. It doesn't stand, it's not, I don't pick up any physical thing and it's depression. So I knew I had to be really honest. And I, you know, got out of here, marched down the road about 6 months, went to a little meeting here, went to a little meeting there. That CA Tuesday night meeting, oh man, that was a party. Loved that one. And I periodically went to professionals on Saturday morning. And I met some people there that checked in. I'm Don, and I have depression. And he's been in recovery for 6 years? What the hell? You didn't want to kill yourself for 6 years? That was my go-to. Another guy checks in. I have depression 7 years. Freaking kidding me? Cam, John and Jeff and Don and they're, you know, come hiking with us. Try something different. Nah, it's not for me. I'm not real outdoorsy, right? I was just looking. I was scared. Interesting, you know, I tell sponsees and I tell new people, sometimes even if you don't want to go to a meeting, you just go and you just listen. And you'll hear something you're supposed to hear. And interestingly enough, yesterday at alumni, a new person, don't get new people really knocking it out of the park like this guy did, but he said, "Fear is a launching pad for courage." That was fantastic. Fear is a launching pad for courage. Fear was my Achilles heel. It kept me from being everything I can. It was like, "Are you nervous? You know, that's fear. I was not fearful of being out here with y'all today. I'm glad to be out here with you guys today. So I tried, and I finally came in there in my little line. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Fine, I'll go. I'll try something different. I'll go to a meeting. So I did. And let me tell you, it's like putting toothpicks under my fingernails. It was not easy. Do the next right thing, progress. Oh, shut up. Fine. So I just decided I'd had enough of my way, and I gave up. I unconditionally surrendered. Unconditionally surrendered. I tell people that. So if they tell you to go stand on your head in the hallway and it's going to help you, you just do it. Somebody tells you how to do your recovery, you just say yes. Okay. So really, it took all that. I still had the fear I was working through, but it took my decision making that kept me in my sickness, and I started to let a support network get to know me, get to know how weird I kind of am, and you know, take their suggestions and just do it, even if I didn't understand. And the strangest thing happened. I mean, it was crazy. Those promises, guess what? Holy mackerel. Why aren't those up here? Those things, I mean, I don't understand. I don't know how it happened. All I did is what my support network and the people who had what I wanted, I did that. I did what they said. And they kind of started to happen when I didn't even realize. And you know, you sit in the meetings and you hear the how it works and the traditions and promises and everything. Remember what happened? You see him over there, he's got a nice little outfit? Well, I started to listen, and I was like, holy mackerel, I got that one. What is up with this? I started to volunteer. I got, you know, Dawn, if you're involved in alumni, there's a 93% recovery rate. Oh, I can get on that bandwagon. Because all I knew was after you try to kill yourself once, it's a 50% chance you're going to do it again. And after you try to kill yourself twice, there's a 70% chance you're going to... Okay, whoa. That's out of my wheelhouse. 70%, I can't control that. I better get control of something. And I'm not control of my life, but my choices are about my recovery program. I am so excited to talk to you about my recovery program. It works for me. I think recovery is a very personal thing. Recovery to me is action. And that's why I came here in my little t-shirt dress and my tennis shoes, because recovery is action. And I wanted to be ready for action up here, talking to y'all. I wasn't sporting the heels, and I wasn't, you know, wearing the frillies. Action. Recovery is not easy. It hurts. It's uncomfortable. But is it the fear that's uncomfortable, or am I sick of being depressed, uncomfortable with that, or am I willing to be uncomfortable with something that maybe I'll get better doing? And I was like, you know, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, so I'll be uncomfortable and go hiking with Don. Don, come on, do family workshop. And Rick hooked me up doing all this AV stuff, hooking up the things. And Rick kind of freaked me out because he's very particular, and I'm not that particular. And so I stopped because I got scared. I let, you know, it's a process. Didn't happen overnight. And I regrouped, and about 6 months later, I was honest. I said, Don, it freaked me out about Rick and the AV stuff. I don't know if I'm going to turn on the light before I plug it in. It's going to blow up. You know what? I don't give a shit if it blows up. We're just going to get it started. You know, I know I'm going to come in here and that damn wire's going to go and the, you know, you've been here with the thing going through your ears. It's all good. And I remember, you know, people say nice things for you and you, you know, volunteer and do 12-step work and help. But, and if you have a sponsee, and the people that are in residence now, it really is true. For you guys to ask for help really works my recovery program. It strengthens my recovery program. A couple Sundays ago, I had a friend who was really struggling. He's been struggling for a long time. Boy, I am so grateful that they had some trust in me that would reach out. And I put down my chocolate chip pancakes that morning, and I got out of my pajamas at 11:30, and I got in my car in the rain, just like with the shitty day we're having now. Got out in the rain and went to get her. She was done. She was ready to unconditionally surrender. Man, and don't thank me. This is, you have given me a gift. You have, every day is a recovery day. I don't do everything on my bullet point list, which I'll tell you in a minute. I don't do it every day, but somewhere in the course of the week, I do a little 12-step work, I do a little volunteer work. My kind of bullet points are take my medicine. That's easy. Medicine does not cure mental illness. Does anybody tell y'all that? Taking the pill helps, and for me, it helps me get back to a normal. What's normal? Kind of a pseudo-normal. It keeps me from going really down in the cellar. Then I have a therapist. And I was seeing that therapist every week. And now I'm down to every 2 weeks. And, you know, a couple times a month I'll see him. Just check in, even if things are okay. Exercise. That's another one I do for my recovery. I was Sporty Spice growing up. Played soccer in school, played tennis, all that kind of stuff. But you know, when you get sick, you don't want to do those things anymore. But I kind of found other niches. I'm a hiker. I'm in the hiking group. Gets me outdoors. And the difference between doing sports for me and doing this nature thing is it's not about sweating and exerting myself. It's about the connection and the fellowship I have with the people that I go with. And at the same time, I get to be in the moment. Because for me, the whole idea was, hey, well, how fast can we get it done? And we're going to get to the end really fast, and we're going to make it all the way through. Slow down. Slow down. It's taking the moment. That was really foreign. But now I'm trying to pass that along. You know, pay it forward. I'm trying to pass it. This is not an exercise. Hiking is not an exercise. You don't have to wear your workout outfit. Bring some water and some snacks. Good to go. And it's about the fellowship. And it is powerful. You are out, you are getting nature, and not only is my body feeling better when I'm out, but I'm more spiritually sound. I'm stronger emotionally. Nutrition, yeah. Y'all know who's bringing the junk food on Family Workshop. That's me. Nutrition is not high on my list. But I try. I try to be conscious about it. I have 20-year-old children who eat like rabbits, and then I'm buying the Little Debbies. but I make an effort to eat healthier. Not every day, but I, and a support network. Holy mackerel, support network. Support network to me doesn't mean somebody that's gonna be there to help me when I'm down. A support network are people that I've incorporated to my life and I've kind of weaseled my way into their lives. And they know me when I'm feeling good and they can recognize when I'm not feeling so good. Sometimes they recognize it before I even want to admit it. I was like, how the hell did he know that? Yeah, I had kind of a crappy day. And they know that. Who is interested in, you know, pays any attention to what I'm doing? How does all these people know my name? I was telling Joe, people keep on coming up to me and they know who I am. I don't know. But I'm grateful. And it happened without a miracle. It happened without the seas parting. All I had to do was let go, follow the life blueprint up here, the 12 steps. It's a blueprint for living. It's not just words. It's, you know, we all have a disease. Get a heart attack, you got to change your diet, you got to exercise, you got to do all these things. That's what we got. And this is what we have to do to stay well. Doesn't matter if you're an addict or a psych or whatever you want. I mean, come on. I feel sorry for all the people out on South Cobb Parkway that do not have a 12-step program. Because you know what? Something's wrong with them. You know, the lady that's cutting you off in Sprouts, oh, she's got issues. It's like, I'm cool, that's all right. You know, if you really want that spot, you take it. I'll just come over here. So I feel really, I was telling Joe earlier when I got here in 05, God damn, I was a healthy person and now I'm gonna be sick for the rest of my life. I'm missing mental illness and I'm a sick person. That wasn't working for me. And so 4.5 years ago, when I came back here for my retread, my graduate program at the Good Institute, I just did it a little different. I had to give up my way of living, and that was very uncomfortable. Some other things that I want to touch on. You know, we all are raised with the big word selfish. I heard when I tried to kill myself that I was very selfish. Oh shit, because you don't want to be selfish. I didn't want to be a bad person. And really I wanted to be a good person. I screwed up a bunch of times and maybe wasn't so good, but selfish was like the F word. I mean, God, I don't want to be one of them. You know, I shared my toys. I tried, not always, but most. I wanted the good soccer ball. So you're taught selfish is so horrible. And then this concept here at the Institute, gotta be selfish. Gotta put number one first. That is horrible. You are so selfish. Well, fortunately, in the past 4.5 years, my kids have seen me do it different. And it's normal for them, for mom to be a little selfish. I take care of myself. I'm not at home cooking breakfast on Saturday morning with the bacon and the chocolate chip pancakes. That's why we had them on Sunday. Because I'm here going to meetings. I'm here connecting. I go to that women's AA meeting is the bomb at 11. You know, what a concept. All women in a meeting and there's no catfights. that's kind of neat. And there are these women who I can trust.
Whoa.
And, you know, you got to walk through it and somehow it becomes real. I don't understand it. I don't really care to understand it. I'm just going to keep doing the next right thing. I'm going to screw up and I'm going to be, oh, I love that one. Progress, not perfection. God, I love that one. And it's okay. Cam, are you worried about today? No, it's going to turn out the way it's supposed to. You know, maybe my bra strap will be showing, or maybe, you know, get upset stomach while, you know, that's just what's supposed to happen. And it's okay, because I'm not perfect. I'm trying, but I'm not perfect. And I'm wrong, right? Perfect. Paying attention? I'm perfect, right? God damn it. Marriage counseling. Progress, not perfection. My other fun one is it's a program of attraction. So I try to wear my nicest active outfit. But really, what's come around, and I was talking with Elise earlier, that fake smile, ooh, man, I'm fine. It's all good. I'm okay. That was a bunch of bullshit. But now when I smile, it's really real. Now when I smile, I'm genuinely excited. This is my safe place. Who would have guessed? Psych hospital? Yeah! It's okay. I'm really fortunate to have a husband with 21 years of sobriety. What a difference from my ex-husband, the starter husband. What a difference. Because he actually got started recovery, but he's a dry drunk. And the growth from the heinous individual that he is, I just feel sorry for him now. Because I have something that he had the opportunity to get and never got it. How lucky are we to be able to be here, afford it, however we, insurance. God damn. You know, I thought you were just lucky to get a college education. Oh, hell. I've gotten more out of my education here than I ever got out of my 4 years at Emory. This was a hell of a lot harder. Because it was personal. They were getting under my skin. They were finding out the things I didn't want anybody to find out about. I did not like that. Because they were going to hurt me if I told them. And they were going to, I was going to do something a couple weeks later, and they were going to bring up that vulnerable thing, and they were coming after me. And they didn't. What? Does this sound like crazy talk to you? Because when I was listening to people up here, it was crazy talk. Because I didn't believe it. But I'll tell you, doing it twice, very differently, finally surrendering, believing that there's somebody, something else, an energy that is in control, it took a load off my back. All I need to do for today, I just need to do today. Because all week I'm thinking, oh, should I be worrying about this Friday talk all week? Am I going to sound normal? You know, screw it. I'm not doing it today. So I didn't worry about it until today. And it was okay. Met up with my friends. Worked out with my kid. My daughter fortunately gave me a distraction. Broke up with her boyfriend. And so I didn't really worry about it. And I showed up here in my active outfit. And all my friends showed up. Well, hell. I am so grateful for having this opportunity to talk to y'all. I just want to touch on my notes because when I've spoken before, there's just some things that I don't want to forget to say. I want to repeat that one that I heard yesterday again. Fear. Fear is real. Fear is a drug for me. It's a bad drug. Fear is a launching pad for courage. So if you can take that fear and take the next step, and you have a support network, people really love you. I mean, now when I talk about my husband, he's fucking lucky to have me. That's big, because I was just the little person. I was just the one who, now he's lucky to have me, and I'm lucky to have him, but it's different. I feel stronger, and some days I don't feel so strong, and you know what? That's okay, because I just need to do the next right thing. And I know when I feel that, I mean, recovery, being an action word, it's not 4 years down the road, it's not comfortable all the time. But the uncomfortable, I know, is gonna pass. It will. Every time. Linda, that uncomfortable is gonna pass. I have a support animal. Some of y'all know Petunia. She was my first support animal. The dog had a sixth sense. The dog was working. And I got her when I tried to get custody of my children after my divorce. And the new custody agreement was even worse. And I didn't get custody of my kids. And I was encouraged to get a pet. And I got Petunia. And somehow she helped me through it. And she helped me in here. Russ brought her here to visit with me as a service animal. And I saw how she helped other people. Made me feel good. I felt I was doing some service work, kind of. And I had her for 5 years. And she was my pal. She was my cornerstone. My family is not my support network. My support network are people that have the same illnesses that we have, that know that feeling that only people with these issues have. And Petunia. And somehow my life got on track last year. It was on a good track last year. And my kids were back in my life. I had teenage daughters that wanted to be with me. That's crazy talk, but they did. And you know what I did to get them to, even after their father told me, don't be with her because you'll get worse like her, and she's bad and you're not safe in her house. All of a sudden, and I did nothing. I didn't have to pay an attorney like I did the first time. I didn't have to pay an attorney. I just did what they told me to do here. I did my recovery program. And my daughter, who's a senior in high school, is like, Mom, can you come with us to Senior Beach Week? Are you high? She wasn't. And okay. I mean, that stuff came to me. And you know what I did to get it? Nothing. I did my recovery program. What the hell? Seriously? I did my recovery program. And when I see new people with psych, I need a sponsor. I said, you want to look for people that you want what they have. You get this camaraderie up at the halfway house. We all did it. We're a family. That's my girl. Until 2 weeks after your discharge, and she's like, I can't do this. You gotta help me. Okay, when we're in here and we graduate, we're like infants. My friend Ellen talks to us about recovery being in infancy. Well, infants can't take care of infants. They're just as new as you are. It's the people with time that I learned to migrate towards. I wanted what they have, and that was my answer. That's where that began for me. I learned tools here, but I learned a different way of living after I graduated. It's hard in here. We're crying. We're uncomfortable. You know, the halfway house, we know. The hard part is really when we get out of here. The complaining, I hear people when they were complaining about the halfway house, I said, you got a cesspool after you leave here. Most of us came in here in a cesspool. And so learning how to manage myself around the chaos of the halfway house gave me some inkling on what to do when I got out of here to my home cesspool. You know, people, why do I have to go to that meeting? She doesn't. I didn't give a damn. They told me to go. I just went. If they don't want to go, that was the selfish. Okay, you stay, but I'm going because I want to get better. I had to get better. I had to get better or a 70% chance I was going to kill myself. That's not cool. So I want to close right now. And I want to tell y'all, I hope this was good, as good for you as it was for me. thank you so much. And I'm so excited. Monday is family workshop. I thought it was in a week. Monday's family workshop, and I'll be behind the table. And I just love to meet you and say hello and tell you about my recovery. My favorite thing to talk about it's my recovery program. That is my favorite thing to talk about is my recovery program. And I appreciate y'all on this Friday night at the end of your work week listening to me talk about my recovery program. I really appreciate it. Thanks. That was fun.
Good job.
That's me.
Thank you so much, Cam. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Killed it.
That was awesome. That was really good. It's a good insight into the other half of this hospital that may not get the attention that it deserves all the time. Okay. I wasn't saying much. Hey, Donna. Donna, I love Donna. How are you doing? Again, thanks, Cam. Appreciate that so much. Cam's a little shy, so but we get her. She has to be encouraged sometimes to get up.